Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking about vaccine safety with naturopathic physician, Dr. Jared Scowron. And Jared, I've teased you about this in the past, but I understand you are related to the famous baseball player, Bill Moose Scowron, correct?
Yes, yeah. Moose was a great player for the Yankees back in the 50s. In fact, I've got his baseball card sitting here on my desk looking at me every day. So, yeah, and the problem is I'm a Red Sox fan at heart, but I've got Yankee blood.
Well, here's the thing. You know, I'm now a Yankee fan because I live in New York, you know, and I'm, you know, sorry, we could still do the interview. I won't be at odds with you. but I grew up in Southern California, and a little-known fact is that Moose Scowron played for the Dodgers in 1963. He played for the Dodgers, and it was toward the end of his career. He wasn't doing that well during the regular season, but he played a crucial role in the World Series of 1963, which involved Sandy Koufax and Don Drysdale and Claude Osteen and, you know, Johnny Roseboro, a classic team, Duke Snider. He hit .385 in the World Series where the Dodgers beat the Yankees, and that was a formidable team in 1963 with you know, the Yankees being powerhouses. So anyway, so let's put aside you know, historical arcane facts and continue with the vaccine controversy. Okay, so you laid it out in part one, you know, some of the hazards associated with vaccine. We know there's a big controversy, and, you know, it's not a matter of, you know, no vaccines versus every vaccine under the sun, and it seems every year we add more vaccines to the roster of vaccines that kids should get. So what are some of the considerations here? We talked earlier about toxic ingredients. We talked about different vaccine schedules. We talked about maybe identifying kids who might be a little more susceptible to adverse effects from vaccines. So let's tackle some of those issues.
Well, yeah, sure. You know, what we're talking about here is future science, you know, because we need to admit to ourselves that vaccines do cause problems in a small number of people, and nobody wants to be that person. Nobody wants to be that kid. Nobody wants to be a parent that has that child with an issue. So where do we go in that science to look genetically at this child is going to react to the vaccines? Or for kids who have reacted to vaccines, how do we do research on them and say, what's the common core? You know, what do these kids all share so that now we can identify kids of the future? And again, either take those children and, you know, make a separated vaccine schedule or avoid vaccines, or do we make a safer vaccine? And I also eventually want to get into titer testing so we can talk about, you know, reducing the vaccine load if people are already immune.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you talk about a vaccine schedule because... there's an article in the Times, I think it was, it's actually today, March 2, 2015, survey, parents increasingly ask doctors to delay vaccines. So that sounds like, you know, hey, more and more people are adopting your viewpoint. But what pediatricians regard this as is a big pain in the you-know-what, because they don't have a lot of time to sit down with parents to talk about their kids. They've got a lot of pressure being a conventional pediatrician. Usually is [S2] Sure. [S1] About 20 minutes. And they say they're wasting nearly half their time arguing with parents about vaccine schedules. And that sometimes, although infrequently, 3% said they often or always tell parents who insist on vaccine delays to seek care from another doctor. In other words, they fire Sure. You know, the parents. They fire them. They say, well, if you don't want to play ball, you know, we're done.
Right. Yeah, you know, we see that a lot. I mean, in our office, we definitely attract those families that either want to avoid vaccinations altogether or want to have a delayed and altered schedule. So we see a lot of families who've gotten fired from their pediatrician and are just looking for pediatricians that will respect their opinion and answer their questions. But, you know, like you said, there's a lot of time, you know, that parents can take up from the pediatrician. The pediatrician's trying to help as many kids as they can during their day. I think a great middle ground is the delayed schedule that Dr. Sears puts forth in his vaccine book. You know, at least it's offering another option that's acceptable.
And is this recommended for all kids, or should one say there's a family history of autoimmunity, or maybe there's a previous sibling who's developed PDD or autism? Would that trigger a greater degree of concern over the potential consequences of vaccines? Or perhaps a child has had a bad previous vaccine history. Maybe they had seizures after a vaccine or something like that.
Right. Yeah, completely. And again, that's what a lot of the parents do in my office is, if they've got a child, you know, who already had a vaccine reaction, or if they've got PDD or any kind of neuropsychiatric or autoimmune issue in their family, they're the ones, you know, who say, geez, I don't want any harm to come to my child. What can we do? Can we delay? Should we avoid? And so these are the people that are asking the questions. You know, it's a lot of the people who don't have this in their family, in their family history, that say, you know, I don't see any reason why not. I want to get vaccinated. And again, the majority of those kids come through just fine. But, you know, how do we highlight those kids that are going to have a problem?
Okay, what about vaccine ingredients? Are there certain vaccines that are safer than others, lower risk, clean vaccines?
Well, you know, I recommend everybody Google CDC vaccine ingredients. You know, you can come up with the list of inactive ingredients that are in the vaccine. And, you know, a lot of them are big, scary words. But I think if we find a vaccine with fewer toxic elements, they're going to be safer. And I think we also need to make sure that we're giving these vaccines one at a time. Let's spread these out. Let's do them a month apart, 2 months apart, 6 months apart. I saw a kid a couple weeks ago in my office. He was adopted from India.
Yeah.
He came in, he got 9 vaccines all at once.
Just got walloped.
Bring him up to speed.
Right. And that's for convenience sake. He started what, I'm sorry? He stopped
talking the next day.
Wow.
He was 5 years old, and then he stopped talking. And
wow.
He got a diagnosis of autism.
Oh, goodness.
So, well, you know, spread him out.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, and I'm just playing the devil's advocate here. I think one of the reasons that they do so darn many vaccines all at once is they figure that, you know, medical care is expensive. Parents are non-compliant. You know, you get the kids in the office, and this is your opportunity. This is, you know, you can't blow it. You know, just get as many shots into the kid as possible, because you never know when these poor people are going to have time to bring the kid in, or are willing to spend the money to bring the kid in. And as a matter of public health, it's just jam them in.
Yep, and exactly the word you said is right. It's compliance. You know, how do we get the majority of the population to get these vaccines? Do them early in life when the parent's more worried, and do them all at once. Load them up. But again, there's been no safety studies.
Yeah.
Nobody said, hey, let's take these kids and put in 9 vaccines at once and see what happens.
Well, you know,
can I ask you a question?
Surely.
When it comes to vaccine inactive ingredients, do we create antibodies to those as we create to the organisms? So for the vaccines that have MSG as an active ingredient.
There's MSG in vaccines? Oh, my God. I didn't know that. No, I mean, so the answer is, of course, yes. I mean, when you use some of these, quote, adjuvants, they're designed to cause the immune system to increase in its reactivity.
Right.
Yeah. So the answer is, of course, a rhetorical question on your part, you know, that surely we are engendering reactions to certain things for these kids.
Yep. And I just wonder how many allergies are we creating by, you know, injecting these other inactive ingredients that aren't the viruses. It's not the measles. It's not the pertussis. But it's MSG or it's who knows what. And am I creating another reaction into my body, you know, that's going to cause other health problems down the road?
Right. Now, in a more overall philosophical sense, vaccines have been a tremendous boon because, you know, we've eliminated certain, not just debilitating diseases, but killer diseases. I mean, clearly, you know, unequivocally, you know, smallpox, what a devastating scourge. We've gotten rid of that. Thank goodness. I think that's an example of, I think we can all have consensus about that. But, you know, more and more we're treating conditions that are hypothetical for kids, like hepatitis, you know, which is a real danger, but it's a hypothetical danger because not all kids are susceptible to hepatitis. Similarly, you know, cervical dysplasia, the HPV vaccine, and on. We're finding more and more things to vaccinate kids against. So ultimately, does that invoke what's called the hygiene hypothesis, the notion that in order to have normal immune systems, and I, by the way, I think that's an untestable thing because I think it would be considered unethical to take a group of kids and don't vaccinate them at all. We can't turn back now and say, okay, we're going to see what their health is like, go back to 1850 versus you know, kids who are getting vaccinations to the max. I just don't think it's not studyable anymore.
No, and you're right. You know, but you can look at the stats. When we look at measles death rates in the 1900s, there was a dramatic drop-off in measles death rates when we started to get good water supply and good plumbing. Mm-hmm. And the vaccine wasn't introduced till 10, 20 years after that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but a good marketing says, hey, look, we gave the vaccine, measles deaths are gone. But honestly, you know, you live in a first world country, you've got good health care, you've got good water supply, people are going to be healthier.
Right. But, you know, also thinking that, you know, hearkening back to, you know, earlier times where, and we actually see this where kids are grow up on farms, they play in the dirt. There's even a recent study that shows that if you dishwash your dishes versus hand wash your dishes, your kids are going to have more allergies. Why? Because kids need to be exposed to germs. That's actually a recent study. You can you know, get your parents to be hand washing again. But the hygiene hypothesis suggests that in order to have a normal immune system vis-a-vis autoimmune diseases, asthma, you know, all the terrible allergies that kids now have, we need to have a boot camp for our immune system. We need to experience some natural infections, as much as that sounds
like
risky.
Chickenpox kissing parties. You know, let's fight it off.
Yeah.
But you're right. You know, you've got an immune system that fights illnesses, and if you don't let it work, how's it going to practice?
Right. Yeah, it's sort of like what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And, of course, a lot of our society is about eliminating all manner of risk. You know, recently, I heard there's like major lawsuits, $20 million of lawsuits against playgrounds in New York City because kids injured themselves on playgrounds. So what are they going to do, make rubber playgrounds with, you know, two-foot-high jungle gyms? And, you know, you can't completely eliminate risk. Otherwise, you'll literally weaken the population.
Well, yeah. You can't put everybody in a bubble.
Yeah, and that's sort of...
But we can be smarter.
Right.
You know, we're not making playgrounds out of spikes. You know, we can make them out of rubber.
Well, okay, so what about providing natural immunity? You know, clearly the patients who see you, and they take responsibility. They say, look, I'm going to eschew the vaccine for my child. They don't just say, I'm coming here to get the vaccine exemption. Now I'm going to take my kid to McDonald's for a Happy Meal.
Right.
They
want
to do other things to buttress and support their child's immune system. They will take responsibility for the most part. They're not just refuseniks, correct?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and here's that middle ground. You know, if somebody wants to avoid vaccine or delay a vaccine, or let's support the immune system for illnesses that we don't have a vaccine for, you know, it's about better nutrition. You know, we aren't feeding the kids fast food. We're not feeding the kids sugar. We're you know, feeding the kids healthy food. We're making sure they've got good vitamin levels, especially vitamin D. I know you're a big fan of vitamin D like myself. You know, why do we have all these colds and flus in the winter? Is it because of the low amount of sun? Is it because of the cold weather, the low vitamin D? You know, make sure that the kids have healthy nutrition. Make sure they exercise. And again, you know, another concern is, you know, we don't want any illness to be spread. So when kids are sick, you keep them home.
Right.
Okay? You take them out of school. They're sick. You know, we know we don't want to spread it to anybody else. So let's keep them home and make them healthier here.
Right. And I think there's so much pressure on kids academically that, and also there's a certain amount of pressure from the parent side that they use school as daycare, that they want to park the kids in school even if they're, you know, spreading germs. And I think that, you know, they talk about the problem of absenteeism. We have truant officers for absenteeism. Actually, a big problem is presentism, which is that we push kids who are unsuitable for school into school when they're sick, and that gets everybody sick.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, in our society today is, you know, so many parents have to work, and can't take any time off of work. So, like you said, school is your babysitter, school is daycare, and, you know, that doesn't help anybody.
Somebody asked me recently about homeopathic vaccines, this notion that you can take very, very tiny. I mean, actually, the homeopathic principle is to take a tiny amount. It's sort of like a precursor to vaccines. You take a tiny amount of a poison and you give it, and that is an antidote to the poison. Is that legit, or is that just a scam?
Well, you know, you might be able to help me on this one because I haven't seen the science. You know,
okay.
I would love to see a research study on titers with mm-hmm. these homeopathic vaccines. Okay, and again, for people who aren't aware of titers, you can measure IgG antibody levels to all of these organisms that we have vaccines for to prove if you're immune.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of my families will do that. Instead of getting three or four or five different injections of the same shot, we will run blood tests that prove immunity, and they'll say, hey, you know, I'm immune. I have no reason to get these other boosters because my kid's fine.
Right.
My
so,
kid's immune.
Yeah, so in effect, I told some people, they said, should I get this and that and the other vaccine? I said, well, why don't we do a blood test so we can actually see, have you been, some
right.
people say, I don't remember being exposed to the mumps or I don't think I had the measles, but maybe I was too young. And sure enough, sometimes we'll test them and they don't recollect they were sick, they were too young, and they actually have titers,
right.
so they don't need the vaccine.
Well, exactly. And some people's immune system is so strong, they'll fight off the virus without showing symptoms.
Yes.
Or the kind of the stereotypical symptoms, but you still become immune. So, you know, testing your immunity is a great way to reduce your vaccine load, because once you're immune, you know, what's the reason to get boosters? But I would love to see a tighter research study on all these homeopathic vaccines.
Right.
You know, I would love to say, here's a homeopathic vaccine, and look, my IgG levels went up.
Right. That would be the scientific way of dealing with it, because otherwise it's just maybe superstitious and, you know, like a folkloric kind of thing without scientific proof.
It would be great, you know, if there's an outbreak, you know, if you know, hey, there's measles in my school right now, so I'm going to give homeopathic measles to really boost my reaction to measles, but I don't know if it confers lifelong immunity or just kind of temporary immune boosting.
What's your take on the recent flu vaccine fiasco? Really was a fiasco because, according to some studies, anywhere from 15% to 25% of people actually got protection against the flu. And I wish I had a buck for every one of my patients who got the flu, despite getting the vaccine. Really didn't work this time.
You know, it didn't. And you know what I was, you stole the words right out of my mouth. Is everybody that I, well, everybody's an exaggeration. So many people that I see who get the flu shot get sick within 48 hours.
Right, that too.
And, you know, and so, geez, how many, you know, A, did the vaccine work? Or B, is it even making me more sick? You know, and a big concern, you know, two big concerns for me. Number one, like you said, the efficacy of it was atrocious. You know, you're looking at, like you said, an average of 20%. And the other secondary concern for me is that most flu vaccines have the neurotoxic mercury preservative still in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've eliminated them from most childhood vaccines, but hey, let's inject that mercury into me.
Why is it that they do that? I mean, it would seem, you know, we're also concerned, you know, Environmental Protection Agency, they want to shut down the coal plants because they're shooting mercury into the atmosphere. And paradoxically, they say, well, yeah, but the mercury, the vaccine mercury, we really need to still have that. We've minimized that, but it's okay to get.
You know, that's a great question. The same thing with the dentist as well. You know, they'll say, hey, this is perfectly fine for me to put into your mouth, but if I'm taking it out, I got to get hazmat.
Yeah.
And, you know, make sure nobody's getting injured on the way out.
Notify OSHA about it, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah. But again, we need better. You know, let's make a better vaccine. Why did the flu shot this year have the 20% efficacious? And like I, you know, like we've been talking about, what else can we do? What else can we do for our immunity? How can I stay healthier? Vaccines don't have to be the only answer.
And another problem I have with vaccines is that, you know, vaccines are designed to protect the elderly or the weak, you know, feeble people, like infants are particularly vulnerable. The elderly are vulnerable. People who have compromised immune systems are particularly vulnerable. But vaccines are notoriously poor at working in people who have poor, you need a good immune system for a vaccine to work. So paradoxically, we may be vaccinating the people get the best response are people who are pretty healthy and would have kind of, they would get pretty sick, you know, maybe four or 5 days of, you know, fever, but, you know, they're not at high risk.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. And, you know, I know kids specifically, you know, their antibody response doesn't really start to develop until they're 12 months of age, and we don't get full immune system development until they're 7.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like you said, we've got the geriatric population where the numbers, you know, their immune system is degrading and it's falling apart, and it's paradoxical. I don't think we've got I don't think we've got the right answer.
Some studies in nursing home residents have suggested that by giving, say, 50,000 international units of vitamin D or 100,000 of vitamin A or any number of different immune supportive nutrients, we can actually make the vaccines work better. And that may be part of our future strategy. Maybe use lower doses, less toxic adjuvants, but instead of giving formaldehyde in the vaccine, maybe giving a booster dose of some sort of nutrient, vitamin A, vitamin D, something, selenium.
Well, we've gotten away from nutrition being a major part of our healthcare. I don't know how much you had, nutrition education in medical school, but I don't think a lot of doctors do nowadays.
Yeah.
When they pass,
I had to seek it out.
Yeah. Why do we pass off the validity of you are what you eat for our healthcare?
Right. And, of course, that is so much the orientation of naturopathic training, which is one of the reasons why some of the real top health authorities in this country are naturopathic physicians. They're NDs as opposed to MDs because they get technical medical training that's very rigorous, but it's based on the principle that natural approaches trump synthetic pharmaceutical approaches, and that's why I always appreciate getting your perspective on subjects related to pediatric health. So what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? How can people learn more about vaccines? Do you talk about them in your recent book?
No, we don't have them in the recent book, but I think the take-home message, the take-home message is to educate yourself. Don't just listen to your pediatrician. Don't just listen to CDC. Definitely don't listen to the media. But educate yourself, and it's hard to find some good middle-of-the-road information out there. Dr. Sears' vaccine book is a great place for middle-of-the-road education. There's a movie called The Greater Good, which is a documentary on vaccine safety. That's a great place to go. There's an osteopath, Sherry Tenpenny, who's quite anti-vax, but she's got a lot of good science behind it. So, educate yourself and make an individual choice. This is not... You're a vaxxer, you're an anti-vaxxer. Can we look at each vaccine as an individual and make an individual choice? Do I need to vaccinate against polio where we haven't had a case in America in years and years? Or, does somebody in the family travel internationally for business and goes to country where they have these illnesses? And those kids need more protection. So it's about education, knowing your rights, and doing what's best you think for your child.
And how can people find out about your practice in Connecticut? Do you have a website?
We've got a couple websites. My practice is naturopathicanswer.com, and our vitamin company is spectrumawakening.com.
And what can people find at spectrumawakening.com?
Spectrum Awakening is our new company where we've created vitamins for kids on the autism spectrum or kids with developmental delay. And these are the vitamins that I've been using in my private practice for 12 years that have really been helping kids, maintain normal development, behavioral development, learning development, et cetera. And, I've gotten a lot of calls from people who, who want to get this in their hands, but they're not close to me to come to my practice. So we've got these vitamins on our website. They are the nutrients that the brain needs to function correctly at a normal level. So, we're trying to help a lot of kids develop as they should and reach their full potential.
And bottom line, you're seeing results. You're seeing kids make unexpected improvements with the right kind of nutritional support, diet modification, and the right nutritional replacement.
Oh, exactly. Better behavior, better sleep, better grades, better language. Just giving the brain what it needs because it doesn't need fast food.
Well, absolutely. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. Dr. Jared Skowron is a naturopathic physician in Connecticut. What town?
Wallingford, Connecticut.
Wallingford, Connecticut. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.